It's time for another podcast. What's up, guys? Pixel Dan here. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to take a brief moment to tell you guys about SuperPowerCollectibles.com. That's right. Superpower Collectibles is the official sponsor of the Geek Easy podcast. And if you want to look for some new toys or collectibles to add to your collection, then Superpower Collectibles is the place you need to be checking out. These guys have a little bit of everything. So many cool things for sale here. They got Star Wars statues from Gentle Giant. They've got NECA action figures like those amazingly cool Predator figures that are on the way. They've got the Kotobukiya artifact statues. They've got the awesome new Star Wars Black Series. You guys have seen those, right? Huge fan of that line. And you can pick them up right there at Superpower Collectibles. But that's not all. They've got so much more. You like Hot Toys? You like Sideshow? You like Play Arts Kai? You like SH Figure Arts? Power Rangers, Monster Arts, so many cool toys, action figures, statues, busts, all of those are available at SuperPowerCollectibles.com, the official sponsor of the Geek Easy podcast. So, while you're listening to this podcast, why not take a little break? Head on over, www.SuperPowerCollectibles.com, browse through the catalog, buy yourself something nice, add it to your collection. You've been working hard. You need something new for your collection. Shop SuperPowerCollectibles.com. So, now that I've got all that out of the way, why don't we get on with today's show?
Greetings, fellow nerds and geeks. Why don't you pull yourself up a chair, grab yourself a beverage, and prepare to enjoy a geek-tastic conversation. Welcome to the Geek Easy.
Welcome back to the Geek Easy. I am Pixel Dan, and today we're going to talk movies again. So in order to discuss these movies, I have brought back a special guest from the first episode, my good friend, Jonathan. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me, Dan. I got to say, even though it's only in the third episode, this is already my favorite podcast of yours, but that's mostly just because you talk about movies and you keep inviting me on.
That's right. You're my go-to person for movies. So I think we talked about this in the first episode, but you know, usually when I go to the theater to see movies, it's usually with you. Mm-hmm. And if it's not with you, we still usually get together afterwards and talk about the movie that we saw. So it only makes sense to have you on to actually talk about these movies, because I just talk about movies better with you. Yeah. I'm just too used to it after all these years.
Well, it's an honor.
So the first time you were on, we talked about Man of Steel, and mostly we talked about how much of that movie we didn't like.
In a way.
Yeah. I think we handled it pretty well, and actually we got quite a bit of positive feedback for that episode, even if people didn't agree with us. So yeah, I think that's really saying something about our ability to talk about these movies, I think. And so I wanted to have you on today because just recently we made a trip out to the theater to go see The Wolverine. And I kind of felt like this would be a really good follow-up to our discussion on Man of Steel, because it's another superhero movie, but it's such a different kind of superhero movie that it feels like it falls in a completely different category, really. I mean, I would put Man of Steel on the level of expectation of something like The Avengers.
Yeah.
Where with The Wolverine, it was kind of like, oh, well, there's another one of those Wolverine movies. Yeah. Maybe we'll go see it and find out if it's fun.
Exactly. Like, you know? It's the power of expectation, especially with movies, is so unbelievable. And that's really why, I mean, a lot of, you know, if I do more and more of these shows, everybody will start to realize pretty quick, my level of likability for a movie is based far more on what they promise versus what they deliver than anything else. Because you take a Man of Steel that I was really pumped for, and I went and saw a lot of things that were wrong with it, and I had such high expectations, and I walked out going, meh, you know.
Right.
Whereas then you come up with The Wolverine, which in theory it's a smaller movie, it's a character I care about far less, even though I've always loved the Hugh Jackman Wolverine. But I come into that movie, we went opening weekend on that Sunday night, and we pretty much went more out of obligation than anything else. You know, I was like, well, we need to go see this. We might as well do it now.
Yeah.
You know, and we were, you know, we didn't think we'd hate it, but we went in going, well, this will be fine. And then we watched and we're like, all right, that was very solid.
Well, and I gotta be honest, I really had my doubts about it because of the movie that came out before.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't, I'll be honest, I didn't even go see Wolverine Origins. From the moment I started seeing the previews of that movie and saw what they were doing with it, I was immediately turned off. And then when everybody confirmed to me, yeah, you don't even need to bother with it, I just never bothered with it. So I skipped it entirely. And when I found out that they were doing the sequel, I was like, well, great, there's another Wolverine movie I'm not going to care about. And but then I started hearing the buzz that, you know what, this kind of makes up for the other movie, you should probably go see it. So I was like, all right, I'll give this a chance. And that's why when you offered, I was like, I might as well suck it up and go see this movie and see if it really is a fun movie.
Yeah, so. And I did see the Origins, and we'll get to a little bit more of that as we go along here. But that's one of those deals where, I mean, I saw the previews for the X-Men Origins Wolverine, so I knew, well, this is going to be terrible. And I watched it anyway, and I went and saw it early, and then I did my duty as a friend and made sure nobody I knew went and saw it if I could help it because of how just... underwhelming it was and below par on every level and everything. But you could tell, if you've seen Origins, you could watch the previews for the Wolverine, the new one here, and tell, all right, this is a different class of movie.
Right.
You know, because the other one looked like a toy commercial. It looked like what Fox was, you know, had made with X-Men 3 and what they were trying to turn the franchise into, and that's nothing but, you know, just a way to cram as many characters into a film as possible so you can sell a few more action figures.
That is so aggravating.
Whereas the Wolverine itself, it looked like Mission Impossible with Logan.
Right.
You know, it looked like a really cool action flick with some you know, espionage isn't the right word, but, you know, there's some secrecy going on there. You can tell there's probably going to be some plot twists in there. They're going to try to tell an interesting story. It just happens to star a guy with healing factor and claws.
Right.
You know?
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Very cool. Awesome. So before we go into the actual discussion on the Wolverine, I thought it'd be fun to kind of recap the previous X-Men films. And I thought that would be kind of fun because thinking all the way back to the first X-Men movie, which was, what, 98?
2000.
Oh, it was 2000. So right at the beginning of the 2000s. Okay. So that the first X-Men movie is kind of special in the way that it was almost like the return of the superhero movie to being like a box office success. Mm-hmm. Before that, we had some superhero movies. We talked a little bit about Blade earlier before we were recording, how Blade had come out. And it had, you know, that was kind of a character that a lot of people didn't even realize was a comic book character, but made some pretty decent movies.
Especially the first one was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, low-budget action movie as far as, I mean, low-budget's not the right word, but it was not a huge budget blockbuster, and it didn't make, you know, $100 million opening weekend or anything, but they made it fairly cheap, and they got their return on it pretty quick. And it got a lot of positive buzz, spawned a couple of sequels, and it was kind of, you're coming off through the, you know, a little bit of the 70s, mostly into the 80s and early 90s, your big tentpole superhero franchises were Superman and Batman, the old school ones.
That's right.
Both started off very solid, followed it up pretty solid, and then just... Jump the Shark doesn't even do the third and fourth.
Both of those franchises were like, wow, that's amazing.
And for the record, I liked Batman Forever, but it still wasn't, you know, it's one of those, you like what you can like out of it, but it doesn't hold up with the rest of the franchise. You know, once Keaton left, that franchise just kind of fell off the side of the earth somehow.
I think Batman and Robin's a terrific comedy. Arnold Schwarzenegger's Mr. Freeze is the greatest.
It has spawned some of my favorite YouTube videos.
For sure.
Yeah, anybody who hasn't seen the Mr. Freeze the musical.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't even remember what the exact title of it was.
I think it's just called Mr. Freeze the musical.
Yeah, as I say, if you YouTube that, you'll find it.
Oh,
it's
amazing.
Hilarious.
Oh, gosh. And anybody that's followed me for any time at all knows that I love Arnold, Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. But so X-Men comes along in 2000, and it's like, first of all, I was really excited just about the announcement of this because I grew up as a kid who was in love with the X-Men. All right. So that was, if you think about, like, I didn't read a lot of comic books. I'll be perfectly honest. I wasn't the type of kid that like read through stories of comic books. I would buy comic books from the store, but mostly it was because, hey, that's an X-Men comic and I like these characters, I'm going to buy this book. Like, that's kind of how I was when I was younger. My biggest kind of like exposure to the X-Men was the cartoon series that was on in the 90s. And that's what made me love the X-Men. And I had all the action figures. It was one of the biggest lines of toys I played with as a kid. And I loved Wolverine. And I know that Wolverine's kind of one of those characters now that everybody feels like he's been shoved down their throats and he's been used a lot. But Wolverine's always going to hold a special place in my heart because I grew up, like, that was my hero when I was a kid. You know?
Which is funny because I felt that way in the 90s.
Really?
As a comic book fan, I felt like I was getting Wolverine shoved down my throat.
And that's...
I just, you know, like... I like him, but with so much exposure and so much stuff, he was never high enough on my list for me to be anything but upset by how much people would always talk about him. Whereas flash forward to now, and I feel like I really like the cinematic Hugh Jackman version, even though he's been a part of a couple of pretty bad movies, the character itself has always been fun, and Hugh Jackman's always been great. So like, I like him so much more now than I did back then.
It's probably, guys like me are probably... the reason that Wolverine got shoved down everybody else's throats, because they were like, look, kids, it appeals to kids, put them on everything. And I was one of those kids that was like, yay, Wolverine! So it's my fault, guys. I'll take the blame for that. So the X-Men movie, I was pretty excited for going into it. It was pretty obvious from just even seeing the trailers that this wasn't going to be our comic book heroes. I mean, they weren't wearing the full-on costumes.
Yeah, they didn't do the color schemes.
This is kind of in an era, too. We've evolved a lot in superhero movies since the X-Men film. This is when they still felt like they needed to kind of really ground this stuff as much as possible, because they probably felt like the average audience wasn't going to go watch people running around in spandex and tights.
Yeah.
So they're like, we'll put them in these black leather suits. But I will say, I still really enjoyed the first X-Men film. Like,
absolutely.
I left it. I was very excited. Hugh Jackman's Wolverine was awesome. Loved watching that character. Even though the things didn't really mesh well with the comics, they switched some things around. They made Rogue kind of the Jubilee character. Like,
yeah,
that's
they
one thing I really.
Those two.
Yeah, they kind of combined those in one character. They made Rogue a lot younger. She kind of was the buddy-buddy with Wolverine like Jubilee was in the 90s.
But that relationship was so much fun to watch develop.
It was good. Yeah, that's the thing. And I think that's kind of an important point to make right here, is that that first X-Men movie kind of established its own movie canon for the X-Men. Like, they took a lot of familiar elements from the comics and they made it their own in a movie universe, and they ran with it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the canon they've stuck with since. Yeah. Now, there have been missteps, and we'll get to those. But they've done a pretty good job throughout these movies of sticking with, well, this is our version of the X-Men and this is how they are.
Yeah.
Even all the way up to the new movie, The Wolverine, it's still that same kind of movie canon. And they've really, so you got to give them credit. Yeah. I mean, they've carved something out and they stuck with it.
And this had to be a gamble for Fox at the time. And I really wish I could go back in time 13 years and pay more attention to kind of how the studio Marvel relationship worked back then, because that has evolved so much now also, whereas, I mean, now, you know, Marvel has its own imprint, it's its big thing, it's got its own studios making its own movies, but it's still involved in all of its properties with Sony, with Fox and everything. But I don't know, I mean, remembering back, I honestly don't know if at any point I knew how much control Marvel had versus how much control Fox had. Because if you look at the selection of Bryan Singer as the writer-director of these movies, that screams current-day Marvel. You know, go out and get a guy who's really talented in movies and really passionate about your project, and put him in charge, let him run with it and see what happens, and something great will come out of it. Whereas, you know, some of the other studio movies that have come along has just been more like, well, this guy wrote a script and it had a superhero in it, and we've got that superhero on the book, so we might as well make the movie, you know?
Yeah.
And you get some of these other Fox properties, even some of the later X-Men movies, or like the Ghost Riders, or pretty much anything DC's done, you know, outside of Batman, Superman. I mean, like that Green Lantern movie. You know, it's like, well, we'll go get a big name in directing, and we'll just throw some stuff on some paper and hope that it works, and it doesn't. It never works. You know?
But
with Bryan Singer, it's like, here's a guy who really knows movies and he really loves X-Men. Let's see what he can make. And I really wish I knew if that was Fox's decision or if that was Marvel's decision.
Yeah. that might be a hint of even back then that Marvel kind of knew what they had.
Yeah.
You know,
and
like
there
Marvel
was so
knew.
Much experimenting.
Yeah,
you know?
Like Marvel knows what they're doing. I think they've made that pretty obvious at this point.
And you'll remember too that this was 2 years before the first Raimi Spider-Man.
Yes,
and so this was really the movie that told the studios, "Hey, we can take these sort of seriously and make a ton of money off of them."
I was going to say, I feel like that first X-Men movie is responsible for seeing things like Spider-Man and all of these superhero movies since. Like, we have X-Men to thank for all this stuff.
And I mean, Spider-Man's opening weekend was, it broke $100 million, I want to say it was the first that did that. It was definitely the highest at the time, I remember for sure, the first 3 days of the first Spider-Man. Broke all sorts of records. So, like, all of these movies from 2002, you can trace directly back to how much money that made and how impressed people were. And it, you can trace directly back to this X-Men movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Man, and, speaking of Spider-Man real quick, I just remember how excited I was the first time I saw that movie, but we should totally save that for another podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can do a whole podcast on the Spider-Man stuff, too.
And hopefully we will, if nothing else, next summer.
Well, with the new movie coming out, I'm sure we will. So the first X-Men, quite a big success, and they greenlight a sequel, X2.
Point out real quick.
Yeah.
Joss Whedon did some script work on that first X-Men.
Yes, he did.
So truly a precursor to all great things that would come from superhero movies.
But I believe the worst thing that Joss Whedon did in the first X-Men movie was write that awesome line that Storm said, "You know what happens when a toad gets struck by lightning?
Yeah.
Same thing that happens to everything else." Well done. That was Joss Whedon's only misstep in the Marvel
Universe. He did write that. Now, I will say, when I read the interview with him talking about that, he even mentioned, you know, that's not how I envisioned it. That's not really how I wrote it. That's just what came out. And then he dropped subject and moved on. So
My bad, guys.
I don't know how he planned on that to come out, but we'll just say nobody's perfect and move on.
So X2 comes out, and this is probably my favorite of the X-Men films. I really like X2. Now, they kind of started doing the thing in this one where they were introducing some new characters, and at first I was a little worried they were kind of doing that thing where they're like, oh, now they're just throwing names in here, because they did the thing where they brought Iceman in, but he's young, like Rogue. And it's kind of one of those things where you start going, okay, now Iceman's supposed to be one of the original X-Men, and now he's a young kid. So, again, this is a completely different universe, and they're telling you straight up, this is not your comic books. This is a different X-Men. But the movie turns out to be really good, and I think my favorite part about this movie, actually, is how good Wolverine is in this movie.
Yep.
Because I always think immediately, when I think about X2, I think about the scene where, like, that SWAT team is breaking into the mansion, and we really get to see Jackman play like an actual Wolverine character. Like,
just
for the first
feral.
Time, he's like a feral Wolverine. He's running around, he's stabbing guys in the chest where they're like against the refrigerator, and he's just slashing everybody. And like this, I'm like so excited while watching this scene. You
and
know?
I'm pretty sure that set the movie precedent, at least, because I don't remember anything quite like that in the first movie.
No,
that really set the movie precedent of Wolverine just murdering people.
Right.
You know,
yes.
Like if push comes to shove, I'm gonna cut you.
Yes, you know? Absolutely. And that's that's the Wolverine you want to see,
exactly.
Because that's the Wolverine you know from the comics and even from the cartoon series. That's how he was.
Yeah.
I mean, he maybe not murdered a lot of people in the cartoon, but he was always that. He's almost an anti-hero.
Yep.
You know, he's
That's exactly what Wolverine is. And that's always been what the appeal was.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You didn't have a lot of characters like him, so he was kind of the Marvel Batman in a way.
There you go.
You know, not power wise or anything.
Except he
like
killed
that.
People. Batman undo.
So he was like the Marvel movie Batman.
Oh no.
But but that's exactly what. Wow,
that was the Bale.
Yeah, yes, it was. Yes, it was. Took me a second to even realize what you were doing there. But that's kind of the thing. I mean, it was that very. You know, it was not what superheroes. You know, your big names, your Spider-Man, your Superman, your big bright colors always do the right thing, and then you've got this gruff little angry person.
Yes.
Who, like I said, will cut you if you get in his way.
Exactly,
you know, and that really did
exactly.
have a lot of appeal.
Great. And so that movie was great. I really love that movie. And I think it did even better than the first movie,
absolutely.
If I'm not mistaken. Like,
absolutely.
Because I remember, like, nobody had anything bad to say about that movie either. Like, that movie came out, and it seemed like everybody loved that movie. That was even about the time that I was really first kind of discovering message boards at the time. So I was on forums, and I remember talking about this movie. And, I mean, everybody loved this movie. Yeah. This was a very exciting film.
It was a calmer, more positive internet.
It really was. I mean, this is a different time. This was, what, 10 years ago? Yeah. The internet wasn't as hostile as it is now. But, I mean, it was very, very well received. So, of course, we get very excited when they greenlight a third X-Men film. Mm-hmm. This is where things take a little bit of a turn, at least in my opinion. I greatly dislike the third X-Men film. And it's because, I mean, like, you know, I love the first two so much, and then this third movie is where they really start going in that direction of what you said about Origins. It starts feeling more like a commercial for some toys.
Yeah.
They are cramming so many characters into this movie that don't need to be just stuck into a movie.
Yep.
We were talking earlier about Madrox, Multiple Man. For no reason, they stick Multiple Man in this movie and make him a villain. Like, mm-hmm. what are you guys doing? Like, if you're going to use Multiple Man, let's really use Multiple Man.
Who, as I remember, was kind of pointless even in the movie. It was just another guy to be there, you know? Right.
They threw in just a bunch of ridiculous stuff. Now, they did add some characters that I liked. Kitty Pryde was in the movie.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed her character. Like, I like Shadow Cat. I was happy to see her. I liked the stuff they did with her. You know, we got to see Juggernaut, and he was all right. Yeah. He was pretty cool. They even did a silly Juggernaut line.
Which we exploded for.
Oh, man. Yeah. We jumped out of our seats. I couldn't believe they did that.
We were very happy with that.
Talk about one of the earliest. Time, at least. That has got to be one of the earliest internet memes.
Oh, yeah.
That got, like, that kind of attention.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
At least as far as my memory goes. Yeah. Though, yeah. Yeah. Because I remember the first time I saw that, still watching it with a buddy of mine. And it might have even been you who sent me the link. I don't
remember.
I was
with you the first time we watched it.
Okay, okay. Yeah, so somebody else sent me the link. Yeah. It was you I was watching it with. And just like, oh, man.
It was so funny, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, though. I mean, like, they...
Well, this X3 was the only evil that I feel Superman Returns put on the world.
There you go.
Like we talked about last time, I loved Returns. But what Returns did is... Warner Brothers came in and offered Bryan Singer a chance to do Superman.
Right.
Right as Bryan Singer was getting started with the third X-Men. So he basically went to Fox and was like, hey guys, love you, appreciate the opportunity. It's Big Blue. I gotta go.
Yeah.
You know? And Fox went into panic mode and hired the first guy walking down the hall.
Yes. Basically.
You know, to come in and direct their movie. And it unfortunately turned out to be Brett Ratner, who I don't like. I liked the first Rush Hour. Red Dragon was great. I mean, Ratner's done some entertaining things, but you know, he's under 50-50 on good versus complete awful, and he's a guy where when he's not on, he's way off.
Yeah.
And X-Men 3 was a victim of just getting the wrong guy at the wrong time to come in, and you know, it's you can see the lack of heart in comparison with those first two to the third one. This was not a guy who came in and loved the X-Men franchise. This was not a guy who came in and read comics, you know, through his childhood, and they actually had meaning to him. If he came in and read comics throughout his childhood, he was the guy just looking at the pictures trying to find explosions. You know?
Oh, okay.
And like I said, just, yeah, I mean, go watch X2 and then watch X3, and there's just a you can almost feel the lack of soul between the two.
Right, I agree.
You know, it's like one of them is a story, this next one's just kind of a movie, and here's some extra characters, and now we'll just murder some people for no
reason.
Exactly.
Gosh, they kill Cyclops off at the beginning of the movie in the most...
Which was another victim of Superman Returns.
Yeah, exactly. But it was the most, like... It was a terrible scene, like a terrible way to get rid of one of your major characters. Yeah.
Even if you're mad at Marsden for leaving your franchise, do Cyclops and the fans some justice.
Exactly.
You know, if you're going to kill him off early, do something other than just pan over and you can hear him explode or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
I checked out right then and there.
Yep.
Like, they did that, and I was just like, I'm done.
Yep.
This movie's going to suck.
But man, remember, like, they killed Professor X in that movie. They killed Jean in that movie.
Right.
They lobotomized Magneto.
Right.
I mean, they were just like, you know what? We're done with X-Men movies, so we'll make sure nobody wants another one.
Yeah. Oh, man. It was awful. It was awful. So I left that with a really bad taste in my mouth. I was mad at the X-Men movies, and I was just like, well, you know what? Fine, I'm done with X-Men movies. Now we've got stuff like the Spider-Man films, which I'm enjoying, and, you know, what else was coming out at that time? They had really done anything.
That would have been 05.
Fantastic Fours had been out.
Returns was on its way. The Fantastic Fours were
which
out.
Which I enjoyed the Fantastic Four films for what they were.
I think that Punisher movie was slightly before that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Tom Jane one. The Tom Jane one. Which I really liked the Tom Jane Punisher a lot, too.
Yep, I did, too. I liked both of those. I liked the Punisher Warzone, too.
It was just so ridiculous. It was very much an average Punisher comic.
Exactly.
You know, yeah.
Exactly.
It was a one-shot standalone Punisher issue of Anarchy.
Oh, you know, man. Yeah. So, all right. So then it feels like several years go by, I think. Like, it's been, like, between X3.
That was, like I said, I'm pretty sure that was 05, I think.
And when did Origins come out?
7 or 8, I want to say.
Yeah, so it was a few years there. And by this time, this is about the time that the Marvel Universe was really picking up.
Yeah,
things,
Iron Man
right?
hit
Iron
no Man, 8.
Iron Man hit in 08.
Yep.
Was that after Origins?
It was right around the same time, I think. I bet it was within a year one way or the other, if not the same year.
So they go into these spinoff movies, basically. And I remember them announcing more than just the Wolverine one. Like, wasn't there going to be, like, X-Men Origins, Magneto?
There was supposed to be a Magneto one.
Yeah, they were going to do all those.
Those were the two they announced originally, and they were going to do a whole bunch of them.
Yeah. So they release this movie that's supposed to be basically the Weapon X story for Wolverine. This is the spinoff movie. This is the one I did not see because I could tell immediately from the trailers, like I said, that this is not a movie I was going to be interested in. I was already mad at X3, and now I see this trailer where we've got Wolverine before he goes through the Weapon X, you know, program or afterwards, and all of a sudden he's running into characters for no reason like Gambit and The Blob and who else is in that? Deadpool. And then they totally screw up Deadpool. You know, like you get real excited because the one redeeming quality about that movie is that they cast Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, who seems like the perfect personality for a character like Deadpool. And it does make sense for Deadpool to be there because he was also part of the Weapon X program. And he's one of those characters that has got such a huge fan following in the comic books. And what do they do to him in this movie? They make him completely unrecognizable.
Yep.
You know, the one thing that
opening scene with him was very Deadpool and very entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, and then he disappears for most of the movie, and then he comes back at the end, and it's just random mesh of bad guy. It's got nothing to do with Deadpool. There's no reason to call it. You know, you could have made the exact same story in the exact same movie and just called that last thing something different.
Yeah.
You could have given it a different weapon number.
Right.
You know, you could have created a brand new name for it and sold additional toys. Then you could have sold Deadpool toys from the beginning and this toy from the end and accomplished both your goals. But instead, it's like you're going out of your way to ruin something
and
that could be profitable.
And it's stuff like that that really makes me go, man, some of these people just have no clue.
Yeah.
They have no clue. And that's why I'm so happy with what Marvel's doing right now with their own movies, because they obviously have a love and a care. I mean, it's their stuff. And they get it. They know what's going to work. And these guys that are just, you know, making a movie with these characters that they have licenses for, they don't understand.
Yeah. Yep.
And, like, they do something like that to Deadpool, and you're just like, well, I'm done.
It accomplishes nothing.
Yeah.
Even if you're going, well, the casual movie fan isn't going to know any of this stuff. It's only the fanboys who are going to care. In that case, the casual movie fan also isn't going to know if you make a few moderate changes that don't upset the fanboys.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Why not cater to both sides of the audience? It's like you forget that one of them even exists.
Exactly.
You know, and I understand the majority of your profits don't come from the fanboys. I also understand by example that if you make the fanboys happy, everybody else is still going to be happy too.
Right.
I can't think of a single superhero movie that all of the comic book fanboys really liked that didn't make a ton of money.
Right.
You know, because when we like them, it translates. We like them because they're good stories told properly, and everybody else likes them too. You know, I did forget that I had a magic machine in my pocket that'll answer any question I have.
Oh yeah.
So X3 was 2006, and Origins was 2009.
Okay.
So yeah, we were right around there.
Okay. Yep. Awesome. Awesome. All right, so X-Men Origins Wolverine is awful.
Yep.
It bombs. As far as I know, it didn't make a lot of money.
No,
like,
it made its opening weekend money and then dropped off sharply because everybody hated it and it got a lot of bad press. And it was, I would venture to guess it probably made a profit of some sort. I'd have to go check the numbers to know for sure.
Right.
But it was critically and fan-wise graded low enough that it immediately canceled any plans they had for doing the Magneto version.
Exactly, right. You know, right. Yeah. And I mean, I like I said, I didn't even bother with it once I started hearing what everybody was saying, and I was reading all the reviews, and I started reading spoilers because I wanted to know how bad it was, and I never saw it. I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that skipped that movie entirely.
Yep.
So, that brings us to X-Men First Class, which is a prequel film. They've decided to go ahead and try a different take on the X-Men universe.
Complete change of direction.
They're changing direction completely. Instead of giving us some origins of specific characters in that same timeline, we're jumping all the way back to the beginning now. And this is supposed to be how the X-Men team came about and the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants came about. Mm-hmm. And we actually just watched this one before recording because I had never actually seen this one before.
Yeah.
I was so disgusted with X-Men 3 and I didn't go see Origins that I just... Yeah. I never even bothered with First Class. And then a bunch of people told me it was pretty decent. So
yeah.
I finally gave in and we watched it right before recording it. And I have to say that the movie itself was pretty entertaining. If we're talking about the timelines here, there is a lot of messes. Like, this is really messy.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is supposed to take place in the 60s when Xavier was younger, Magneto was younger. We're learning about them, kind of realizing there's other mutants out there, getting them together, trying to form some kind of, like, bond between them to create this team. You know, the government's kind of figuring out about it. We're seeing the introduction of things like Cerebro. So it's seriously an origin story for the entire mutant universe, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the problems I have with it is because they kind of do that thing again where they're like, well, we're the movie universe, so we're going to put whatever characters we want to in this. And here we've got Mystique hanging out with Xavier when they're both about the same age.
Yeah, they're like, it's like they grew up as siblings.
Yeah, they grew up as siblings, and they've almost kind of got like a love connection thing going on. And it's just like, well, where was all this in the previous movies? First of all, Mystique was absolutely younger than Xavier in the previous movies. We never got any sort of, like, a feeling that there was a connection between those two characters, ever.
Yeah. There was no dialogue at any point that made it sound like they had lived together through adolescence.
Yeah, exactly. And here we are getting, you know, these two are just, like, best friends in this movie. You know, we've got stuff like... Banshee shows up and he's a kid and I'm pretty sure he's supposed to be older than the rest of the, you know, like that's fine because I guess the era and he kind of grows up, but also he's not Scottish at all in this movie and that kind of bugs me. I don't know. I guess one of the biggest problems is that Havok is in this movie and he's supposed to be Cyclops' younger brother, correct? Or is he his older brother?
I think he's his younger.
Either way,
he's not 40 years
different. He's not 40 years different than Cyclops. That's a big, big problem I have. I mean, they call him the Summers. You know,
him Alex Summers.
He's the same guy, but the age difference is too big to be Cyclops' brother.
I didn't take First Class seriously at all until I actually saw it. Through all the press and casting and previews and all that stuff, like it did, like it even looked entertaining. But I went, all right, I've seen the last two X-Men movies. I know they don't care.
Right.
They have flat out said this is a prequel. It does connect with the other ones. And I've seen enough just in the previews to know that that's not true. You know, there's no way.
Right.
And so I just kind of wrote it off. But again, it's a big budget superhero flick, so I'm gonna go watch it. And I went and watched it, and I ended up really enjoying it. Like, thoroughly enjoyed sitting through the theater and watching it. And what I had to do was disconnect all the stuff I had read from the studio saying it was a prequel and just tell myself, you know what, I'm a consider this a brand new take on a brand new franchise, and if I forget that the other movies existed at all, this is very solid.
Right.
And I can ignore all that other stuff and just enjoy it. And therefore, doing that... It was easy to really like because it is a cool flick. You know, they got all that. Magneto was hardcore.
Oh, Magneto was so good in this movie.
Yeah, and especially like the first half when he's kind of on his own and it's almost doing like, it's almost like, it reminded me of the Daniel Craig James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how just kind of that attitude and that standoffishness he had, but he was just so hardcore when it came to hunting down those guys who had, Kevin Bacon, essentially, who, honestly, until he watched the movie again, I sort of forgot he was even in it. And he was awesome, so I shouldn't have forgot that. Yeah, but, he popped up on screen, and I'm like, oh, yeah, Kevin Bacon! He's going to stop dancing in this world or something. Oh, no, wait, he wants to start dancing.
Yep, that's what this movie was.
But, yeah, I mean, solid, entertaining flick. It's just that when you tell me, yeah, this is going to lead into the 2000, you know, first X-Men movie, I'm going, no, there's so many things wrong with it, you know. Beast is already part of the team and around. He wasn't in the first two movies at all. He created Cerebro
in this movie. Yeah, you know? There's definitely some disconnects.
Yeah, there's just a lot of things, you know.
And that's the funny thing, too, is like, yes, that doesn't connect to the other movies at all, but then you kind of go, okay, but Beast is supposed to be one of the original members.
Yeah.
So okay on that part, but none of these other people are supposed to be one of the original members, so you can't even use that argument.
And I was fine with them having Beast in it. I loved that they had Beast in it. It's just that it didn't mesh with the rest of the movies.
No, it really doesn't.
It's one of those deals where, and they even had, I remember, I think it was in X2, there was like a list of mutants somewhere in the background, and Hank McCoy's name showed up on it. It was one of those kind of throw-ins.
Yeah.
You know, it was a tease to the comic book audience at the time. But it's not like you can pretend that Beast was always kind of around. They just didn't happen to be talking to him then. I mean, this was all new information at a time in the other franchise. So it's just one of those things where just tell me, hey, this really doesn't have anything to do with these other movies. It's just a fun prequel type thing, and I'll really enjoy it. You tell me, yeah, it leads right in. Everything's fine.
Yeah,
and I was like, no, wait a minute, guys. Wait a minute. I have a DVD player.
Right, yeah.
I can watch these other movies again and disprove half of this stuff.
Exactly. There's definitely some timeline problems.
There were
also another thing I was thinking of, too. Like, Magneto in that movie, how old do you think Magneto was in that movie?
30.
He probably looked like he was around 30 years old.
Yeah, well, I mean, they show that scene in 44.
Okay.
And he didn't look like quite a teenager yet.
So this movie takes place in the 60s.
Yeah.
So I guess...
Well, and you got to remember, though, too, Magneto has to be, you know, in 10 or 20 years here, they're going to have trouble telling Magneto stories.
That's
because
true.
He's
a
product of the Holocaust.
Yeah.
So eventually he's going to have to be 100.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Now, I will say that there was a pretty fun little... there was a couple little, like, Easter egg scenes in there, like cameo appearances. I cracked up at the Wolverine cameo.
Oh, it was so
that was so funny because it was just like it didn't need to be there.
Nope, but it was.
But it was hilarious. Yeah. Like I was just like, okay, that's fine. I'll accept it because it's funny. Yep. And then the other one, which I didn't even notice at first until you mentioned it, but the scene where the younger Mystique is changing into different women. One of the women she changes
because Magneto says something about how young she looks, and so she switches again, and she's like, well, how about this? And she switches to an older woman.
Which is Rebecca Romijn.
Yeah.
Which is who played Mystique in the other movie. So I was like, that's pretty spectacular.
Which is funny, too, because me and Dan had the same reaction. Because when they first show her, she's kind of in the background of the room when she changes. And I didn't recognize her at first, and I thought it looked like Stifler's mom.
Stifler's mom.
From American Pie. And then they did the close-up, and I'm like, oh, she's way younger than Stifler's mom. Also, she's Rebecca Romijn, the old Mystique.
Yep, good way to go us. At least we both have the same thought, though.
Exactly.
I mean, we both thought it. But the movie itself, it was pretty good. I enjoyed the movie. It just has some serious timeline issues. So now we know, we knew before the Wolverine going into it, that they were going to be doing a new X-Men movie that is going to be a sequel to both X-Men First Class and X3. Because they're doing the Days of Future Past storyline. Now, if you've been a comic book fan, you know that that's a storyline taken straight out of the comic books. And it's like a time travel kind of story. It's a time crossover. So, it's kind of neat that they are meshing these two different kind of timelines now. We got the younger X team from First Class. We got the original X team from X3. And they're doing this crossover movie. So, that's kind of exciting.
Yep.
They are putting the two together. So they do go to the same universe, I guess, even though it doesn't really
mesh.
And
that's what I'm really excited to see now, because if they do Days of Future Past right, which just means make it entertaining and make it make sense, that's what I mean by right. I don't mean follow the comic book exactly or anything
like that.
Which I have faith they will do, because I'm a big Bryan Singer fan, and they brought him back. And he's the guy who gave this franchise all the heart to begin
with.
So my assumption is, if Bryan Singer's going to come in and say, you know what, it can be done and I can do it, then I think it can be done and I think he can do it. And if they do a movie that meshes these two universes into one thing, and in any way, shape, or form, either makes all of those things that don't make sense between, you know, as far as the gap between First Class and X-Men 1, if it can make them all make sense, even though they don't right now, or if it can simply tastefully ignore them to the point where they don't matter, either way, I'm going to be super happy, and I'm going to be able to like First Class even more than I already do.
Right.
You know? So in retrospect, it's going to make this movie better.
You're right. Okay, cool. So we're going to talk about that a little bit more at the end and our excitement about it at the end of our review of The Wolverine. So now I think it's time to go ahead and get into our discussion about the latest movie, which was The Wolverine.
Yep. Now that everybody's been listening for 40 minutes, that's we right. can start talking about our topic.
That's right. Yep. Hopefully you guys are still with us here. So I want to give you guys all a heads up. We are going to get heavily into spoiler territory here. So if you have not seen The Wolverine yet and you do not want the movie spoiled, well, at least you got 40 minutes of podcast to listen to before this, but you should probably go ahead and turn it off now.
Oh, also, I want to warn everybody that if you haven't seen X1 through X3, X-Men Origins Wolverine, or X-Men First Class, we're going to spoil a bunch of that in this podcast also. So be careful.
Retrospectively, we might have spoiled all that stuff.
Am I late on that?
All right. Okay, so new movie coming out, the new movie that came out, The Wolverine. Immediately upon seeing the trailers for this, we talked about already how this, you could tell, this was not going to be like Wolverine Origins.
Yep.
This was a different kind of movie. This looked like it was going to be an actual story,
mm-hmm.
you know, a real Wolverine story. And from what I understand, most of this movie is taken or adapted straight from a storyline from the X-Men comic books, and it's adapted pretty well. Now, again, I have to kind of reiterate that I haven't read a lot of stories in depth in comics. There's a lot of stuff I've read a lot of things now as an adult, but I've got a lot of catching up. I'm still trying to go back and read like important stories in comics. Yeah. So this is one that I kind of researched after I saw the movie.
And, and that's the thing with me too, is because I will probably frustrate most of your audience because I know just enough about a lot of the comic book storylines from when I used to be a huge comic book guy through high school and everything, to where I probably sound like a comic book elitist to the non-comic book fans out there. And to the actual comic book fans out there who are listening, I probably sound like I have no idea what I'm talking about because I'm 15 years removed from all my information. But yeah, but exactly like you said, I did some research and I looked up a few things and it does look like, and I can't even remember what the story was now because regardless, it comes out of the comic books and it did it pretty close, but it kind of made it its own, did a few...
Well, you know what I think it did? I think it took that story and it adapted it pretty well to the already established X-Men movie universe.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it put its own kind of plot twists in there, so it can still give you a surprise
Here
and there. So I think it did a really cool job not having read the source material, but reading of the source material. It sounds like it's close enough to be entertaining, different enough to be new.
Right, exactly. All right, so the movie opens up and we get this shot of 1945 Japan.
Mm-hmm.
World War II is going on, which is, you know, kind of cool because we know what all is going on with Magneto at the same time, too,
Watching
First Class. So this is same era. And Wolverine is in a Japanese POW camp. We don't know exactly why, but he's there.
Yep.
He's a prisoner. And this is about the time that the atomic bomb is getting dropped on Nagasaki, or, you know, the Hiroshima bomb and all that big stuff. Well, everybody knows about their history and everything. This is what's happening right now. So the Japanese soldiers are all coming out. You know, they're, what's that called? Harikari, when they commit suicide or whatever.
Yeah,
they're all laying
suicide.
Down. They're doing ritual suicide because they know that there's no surviving this bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And while this is going on, we are introduced to a Japanese soldier named Yashida. And what happens here is, like, Wolverine, like, basically is getting out of his little prison that he's in, and he actually calls...
I want to know how they got him down into that thing.
Yeah, right? Like, oh, just threw him down there, whatever, and then he just healed up. I don't know.
Yeah, but, like, how did they beat him down enough to
get
him into a well?
I know, it's almost like, what?
Yeah.
How did he get in there in the first place? So Wolverine basically saves this officer. This officer's kind of, you know, he's not sure he wants to do the harikari with all the other guys.
Yeah.
Wolverine says, you know, come with me.
And he was trying to save Wolverine
first,
because that bomb was coming, so he went and kind of opened that cage and is like, you know, like, get out of here, you know, and then went like he was going to slice himself open, and instead Logan grabs him and just runs back into that, you know, throws him down that well he was in and just covers his body.
Oh, yeah. This is an amazing scene. And what I think is great about this scene is, for anybody that may not have already seen an X-Men movie or understands what Wolverine's powers are, this was a great way to just demonstrate his powers or remind you what his powers were without actually telling you.
Yep.
Because what he does is he throws Yashida down at the bottom of this well and then lays on top of him so that this bomb blast just completely scorches Wolverine, like burns him down to like the muscle and the bone even in some spots.
It just incinerates him.
Incinerates Logan. But after the blast is over, we see Logan regenerate and be perfectly normal again. While he went
as
to say,
Yoshida sees, you know, this as well.
Yoshida sees this happening, and he's just like in awe of what's going on. And Yoshida's life has been saved.
Plus, it's in the 40s and bone claws.
Yes, that's another thing to point out right here. This is long before the Weapon X project. Wolverine's got bone claws, and it's, you can notice that while he's climbing up that well, you notice that they're not metal claws. There's a lot of fun stuff going on here. You get this really, really intense scene with Wolverine like exploding and then regenerating. I mean, that scene was awesome.
Yeah, I loved that scene.
So after that gets all over, we get the intro credits, and then boom, we're in present day. And this is where Hobo Logan is walking around. We've got a theme here. What's with the hobo?
2013, year of the hobo superhero.
Hobo Superman was walking around in Man of Steel. Now we got Hobo Logan just drifting around.
Tony Stark was
Hobo Stark.
I mean, he didn't grow the whole beard thing, but you remember he had the suit tied up to him. He was wandering around that town with, you know, nowhere to go and nothing to change into and whatever.
You're the hobo.
Yeah, it's a hobo superhero, man. I can't wait to see Thor now.
Hobo Thor. Oh, man. So, basically, we're kind of told or reminded right here at the beginning that where we're at in present day is following the events that happened in X-Men 3.
Yep.
And the reason we know this is because Wolverine is, first of all, he wakes up from this nightmare like he's remembering this stuff that happened in Japan. Which at first, I mean, I don't really know how I feel about that, because I'm like, he shouldn't have any memory prior to the Weapon X project.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't think they specifically imply that he's remembered it. And I'm trying to think.
And that's why, like, at first, because he kind of wakes up and he screams and he's having this nightmare, but it very well could have just been visions of his past haunting him.
Yeah.
And I kind of overlooked it at this point.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's fine. But a little bit later on, I kind of question it again.
Because when they, and we're jumping ahead just a little bit here, but when they find Wolverine and they bring him back to this Yoshida guy when he's older, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking then, now Logan shouldn't have a clue what is going on here,
right.
What any of this is. But I'm not convinced that he did.
Oh, okay. You know? Like he might have just been kind of going
along with it. Yeah, and I
really
want to watch it again and see how that goes, because, he doesn't, that I recollect, I don't think at any point he really talks about saving this guy's life or reminisces about it, per se. I mean, he's kind of told, you know, our master wants to meet you. Because you did a great thing for him. Well, he knows he's lost half of his memory.
Right.
So
right.
It's very possible he's just going, all right, apparently I helped some guy. Let's go see what happens.
And I got nothing else to do. I'm Hobo Wolverine right now.
I want to go watch it again and try to remember that. But I'm perfectly willing to accept that if that's the way they play it, you know?
If that's the way it is.
The
yeah.
other thing is, and I don't remember a lot of those. I need to go watch all three of them again, apparently. Ugh, that means I got to watch three again.
Yes.
But. I don't remember the specifics. I mean, he didn't get his memory back at any point, did he? Because that was kind of him searching for himself was a big part of at least those first couple of movies.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how that specifically got resolved. I know it got resolved to the point where he discovered what they had done to him. But
yeah,
I don't
think
that really gave his memory back.
Because that was
anything,
a big part of the second movie, because that's when he came across Stryker, and then we got Lady Deathstrike and all that stuff going on. And he found
and
out
he
about the
about
Weapon
the project
X program.
And he knew what had happened.
But I don't think he got his memory back.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I don't
I wasn't
remember.
Sure. So it's kind of one of those, like, until I know for sure I need to be upset, I'll give the movie the benefit of the doubt.
All right. That's fair. If there's probably people out there listening right now that just know, and they're like yelling at their speed.
Yeah.
No, guys, you got to like...
Leave us angry comments. But make them educational angry comments.
As long as we learn something from it, we're okay with it. So we also get established right here in the beginning that he's been having all these hallucinations and nightmares about Jean Grey.
Yep.
And that's because, you know, he was forced to kill her in X-Men 3, and he loved her.
Yeah, they did the whole Jean Grey love, you know,
they did
the
triangle with him and
Cyclops.
Yep. So he has feelings for Jean. He's really regretting the fact that he had to kill her. And... this is why, assumably, this is why he's wandering around as a hobo right now. I mean, all hell broke loose in X-Men 3 with Xavier supposedly being dead.
Well, yeah, and Jean, as I said, I mean, the team's probably disbanded. Everybody he knows is dead.
So he's just walking around, and he's bummed out, and he's having these terrible hallucinations. So this is a good way for them also to establish that this is immediately following what happened in X-Men 3. Yeah. We know right here. So we kind of see just some stuff with him walking around. We get to the scene where he's at this bar and these guys are starting to kind of give him some trouble. And we get real excited because we're like, man, Wolverine's about to kill all these guys because he doesn't care. He's about to kill them all and it's going to be awesome. But he's interrupted by this young Japanese woman named Yukio. And she basically comes in and says, don't worry about it because they're going to die next week anyway in the same van that they're in right now. And he's just like, what? You know, what does that even mean? How do you know that? And this is kind of how we establish that Yukio's got this power. She's a mutant, and her mutant power is that she can envision when and where people are going to die. Which, by the way, what a terrible mutant. I would hate having that ability. What an awful ability to have.
She mentioned seeing her own at one point, too, doesn't she? Yeah. So it's like, that's heavy, man.
Oh, that's awful, man. Yeah. That would be terrible. That's her power. So basically she comes to him and says that, you know, her boss sent her to him. He's basically wants to repay Logan. Right, like she gives him a sword and says it's a gift from her boss, who Logan had done a great deed for at one point, and he wants Logan to come back and meet with him. And, you know, Logan agrees. He's got whatever. He's hobo Logan right now. He's got nothing to lose, and he decides to go ahead and go with her. So they fly over to Japan. And when they arrive, we are then Yukio then brings Logan in and introduces him to old man Yoshida, the man that he saved back in Japan. We're talking again. I'm not real sure if he knows who Yoshida is or if he's just
I never
really
got
sure.
a clear indication. May be very obvious. Maybe I just missed it, but I never got a clear indication. So
at this point, Yoshida basically explains to Logan, look, you did me a great deed. Now let me do you a great deed before I die because I'm on my deathbed. He's got cancer or something, and he's in a bed, and there's lots of high-tech equipment hooked up to him because he's like this big corporate CEO of this technology industry, we find out. And he's got a nurse in there working on him. And he basically says to Logan, look, you did me this great favor. Let me do you a great favor. I can rid you of your healing factor. I can rid you of your curse, basically. He's presenting this as like, you know, Logan's curse is that he'll never die because he's always healing. Let me take that away from you.
And he basically flat out says, you know, if we found a way to transfer it, you know, I want to live, you want to die, let's make a deal.
Exactly, right. Yeah. Logan basically says, look, what's been done to me can't be undone. And I think that's interesting that he says that because the healing factor wasn't actually done to him.
Yeah.
That was part of his mutant ability. But so maybe that's a key.
Again, though, does he fully know that?
I was going to say that might be a key right there that he still doesn't really remember things.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. That's a good thought to think of. But basically, like Yoshida kind of says, you know, well, you can think about it. You can stay here, get yourself cleaned up, you know, whatever, all that good stuff. At this time, we also are introduced to Yoshida's granddaughter, Mariko. Now, Mariko, for comic fans, will know that this is an important character from the comics. She had a very, you know, a pretty good connection with the Wolverine character, especially in this particular story arc here. So we get introduced to her. She's basically upset. I think it's because of whatever he's trying to do or her grandfather's trying to do. And also, she's like, she's in kind of an arranged marriage, an engagement. She's not happy about that. Yeah. So there's a lot of that kind of going on.
And the grandfather's going to leave the whole company to her.
Yes.
Does she know that at the point?
I don't think – we don't find that out until later on when we find out that her dad is super mad.
Okay.
Right? So so then we get to the point, okay, Logan's going to go ahead and crash here, whatever. They show this goofy scene with like these Japanese servants washing Logan. Which is just ridiculous. Like, they're scrubbing him, and he's he's grunting
and
everything.
Well, I think that was actually before they took him in to see the old guy.
Really?
Yeah, because they didn't want him to see the old guy so disheveled.
Oh, that's right, that's right. You gotta clean yourself up, yeah. And I still remember because, like, they get him all cleaned up and everything, and then he comes out, and the only part of his face that's shaved is his chin. He leaves all the rest of the hair, you know, because he's got the Wolverine cut on.
Now,
His hair's styled like Wolverine's again. It's like, man, they did a good job. They knew exactly what he wanted.
Yep.
So, yeah, that scene, I felt like that was worth mentioning because that's so goofy.
Oh, yeah, it was fun, though.
Right. So, okay, so now Logan's going to bed. He's staying the night. And there's this really weird scene that seems like it's another one of his hallucinations that he's been having where the nurse Yoshida's nurse, Viper, is injecting Wolverine with something. It looks like she's putting something in him. But then the scene kind of changes and he wakes up and you're like, oh, was this just another one of his dreams? Was he having another nightmare? What was that all about? And they kind of quickly just scoot away from that afterwards. So it's one of those things where you're just not really sure what had just happened there.
Yeah.
But it's the next morning and we learn that Yoshida died. He died overnight. And we kind of fast forward at this point. It's Yoshida's funeral and Wolverine is attending with Mariko. He's basically kind of keeping her safe or whatever at this thing. And they're walking into the funeral, and this is where we get our first glimpse at there's like a ninja up on the roof with a bow and arrow, and you don't know exactly what his intentions are at first. He's kind of like looking over everything, and I'm trying to remember his name. I've got it written down here somewhere. But anyway, so like the funeral's going on, and what happens is the Yakuza ends up breaking in. Harada, that's his name. Ninja's name is Harada. So the Yakuza break in and they kidnap Mariko. And at this point you realize, oh, Harada's protecting her because he starts firing arrows at all the Yakuza members, right? But at the same time, Wolverine's, you know, he's ready to whoop some Yakuza butt.
Yeah.
So he runs out, he pops the claws, he starts fighting, he gets shot. Snicked bub everywhere. Yep. But then Wolverine gets shot. And he immediately realizes, whoa, something's not right here because I'm shot and I'm bleeding and I'm hurting and it's not healing.
Yeah. But it's kind of awkward, too, though, because, like, he gets shot and you can see it slows him down and it's not healing like it's supposed to, but he can still run around and slice people, you know? So it's not like he's, like, fully human and his power's gone. It's just been dulled.
It's dulled. It's not working quite the way it wants to. But what I really do like about this scene is it shows you that he doesn't know any other way, you know? Like, he's, as far as he knows, he's lived his entire life with the ability to heal, and he can always fight and never stop fighting. So even though something's obviously wrong, he doesn't know when to quit fighting.
He
is still running around trying to fight these dudes while he's been shot multiple times, and he's bleeding, but he doesn't care. He's still fighting these guys. And I thought this was a really cool scene.
Does not give a darn.
Yeah, I thought it was a really cool scene because it really shows you kind of just like that Wolverine character again. You know, you get to see he's just...
And it's neat seeing weakness in him.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Even though he doesn't care about it and he fights through it, it's stopping him, it's hurting him, it's slowing him down, and we've never really seen that out of Wolverine, you know?
Right, exactly. Exactly. All right, so Wolverine gets Mariko out of there. He goes on the run. The Yakuza are chasing them, and this is where we get to a really fun scene. Mm-hmm. This is where we get to the bullet train.
Yep.
Oh, so it's this really fun scene where Wolverine and Mariko board the bullet train because she's like, "No, I know where I'm going. I need to go to my home. That's where we can hide." And Wolverine's like, "I think that's a bad idea," but you know, she does it. She gets on this train. He hears something. He realizes that they're on this train, so he leaves. And we go through this amazing fight scene where he's fighting Yakuza guys while he's still bleeding, by the way. He's still got blood all over the place. But they end up on the roof of this bullet train. Yeah.
And this is exactly where I got the impression, which I think I mentioned earlier, when I was watching these previews, and I was like, well, that just kind of looks like Mission Impossible, but with Wolverine.
Yeah.
And that's why, I mean, this looks like something straight out of the first Mission Impossible, with Tom Cruise on top of that train, you know, like fighting those guys. And that's exactly what this is, except for with claws and strength and all this stuff. And it's just awesome. You know, it's so much fun to watch. And they do this really neat bit where, you know, as the train's flying through, it's got all these obstacles that some of them are pretty close to the train and some of them are a couple of feet off. So it's almost like, you know, if you're playing one of those Star Wars video games going through the Death Star track where you got to go up and down. So, like, they notice this stuff coming, and he's got to leap into the air to avoid it and then fly 20 feet down the train and catch himself, you know?
Yeah,
and then he's
got
to duck under to avoid other stuff while he's fighting these Yakuza guys who are doing the same thing. And they're not even super guys. They're just guys with, you know, enough sharp things to hold him onto this train that are going after him. And he does that super cool bit towards the end where he just sort of lets go and flies at that guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just so much fun to watch.
Oh,
like,
man.
Everything, when you look at the trailer and go, that scene looks kind of fun. No, that scene is awesome.
That scene is amazing. It's one of the best scenes in this whole movie. And then my favorite part at the very end of it, he's facing off with that last guy. And they're both doing that bit where, like, there's, like, these overhangs that are really low. And in order to avoid them, they have to let go of the train to jump up over them, and then they come down and they catch themselves. So they jump over like three of those. And Wolverine's at the part where he's facing where he can see what's coming, yeah. And the Yakuza guy's got his back to it. So they get to this part where Wolverine tricks him and acts like he's going to jump, and the guy jumps and then just smacks right into it. Oh, it's amazing. Like, it's just so much fun. Yep. So that whole scene... Yeah, was a total blast.
That's worth the price of admission right there.
Total blast. And that was just, it was just a really fun, action-packed, like, superhero fight scene. You know, like, that was a comic book put into a movie right there.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yep.
So, after the big exciting scene right there, this is where we kind of slow things down a little bit. You know, they do this funny little thing where, like, they hide out in this, like, sex hotel, which is so weird, but I guess it is Japan, right? So, but they basically, they find themselves eventually making it to Mariko's home in Nagasaki. And they kind of lay low there for a while. And they, it does, I kind of get the impression that they do lay low there for a couple days, maybe, because this is the part where you see Logan and Mariko kind of bonding with each other. Like, she kind of stitches up his wounds and cleans him up, and they kind of start having a little bit of a love thing going on.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell he's into her. And...
Yeah, which, again, this is a good nod for comic fans, because those two were an item in the comic books. I mean, there was a love connection between these two characters.
And she really brought a lot of humanity.
Absolutely. And it's kind of one of those things too where, like, you realize he's like, he's kind of letting go of the gene thing finally. He's moving on with his life. He's got Mariko now. He's kind of got himself a purpose right now because he's into this girl. He wants to protect this girl. You know, all this stuff is going on. So we get this really cool scene there where we're really humanizing Logan and everything, and we're getting this connection with Mariko. But at this point, she's been located. And this is where I believe... Let's see. Hold on. I've lost my place now.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Quick, say something interesting.
Right. Okay, so... Oh, that's right. First of all, it cuts over back to Yukio. Yukio wakes up and has this vision of Logan dying.
Mm-hmm.
She sees Logan's death. So I believe... Because Logan had asked her to stay back. He had asked her to stay behind... Or whatever at this point while he saves
Mariko. Well, when those Yakuza guys crashed that funeral... she kind of popped out and started because her and Mariko are like sisters. You know, they're not blood sisters. She was adopted by the family because I think the grandfather knew she had
a power. Yeah.
But he, you know, he raised them together, and so there's a very strong bond between those two also. So when she starts getting attacked, and Archer Dude shows up to protect her, and Wolverine busts out and starts going through Yakuza guys like they're butter. And then, you know, she busts out her little staff also and gets into some pretty cool
fights. Oh, yeah, that's right. Well. She does lots of cool, like, flippy stuff and everything. Yeah. She's a lot
of fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so now she's got this vision, and so she's like, well, yeah, I mean, she was looking for him anyway, I think. But, now she's like, well, we got to find him.
I got to go find Logan. Yeah, she's like, I just got this vision of Logan dying. I got to go find him. Before she arrives at Mariko's home, Mariko is kidnapped by the Yakuza. The Yakuza show up. Mariko goes outside to see what's going on. They snatch her up before Logan can get out there and get to him.
Yep.
So Logan does end up catching one of the Yakuza guys with Yukio. Basically gets out of him what's going on, who's in charge of this. And this is where they confront Mariko's corrupt fiancé. This is the one that she was kind of, you know, like, she didn't want to marry this guy.
Yeah, but
family was making her. And we find out that he's the Minister of Justice, but he's very corrupt.
Yep.
Logan and Yukio actually break in on him while he's, like, with all these hookers, you know, and he's throwing money all over the place, and he's having this ridiculous time. So Logan comes in and crashes the party. Basically starts, you know, interrogating him, wants to know who's in charge of all this, what's going on. And this is where he basically talks about that Shingen? And is that Mariko's dad? I think it is.
I think so.
He's kind of the guy that's he's paying off the Yakuza right now to do this. And basically it boils down to the fact that he's mad that Yoshida left this corporation to Mariko and not him.
Yep.
So he's basically out to get his own daughter because of it.
Yep.
This
is too when he starts the interrogation and Logan's telling him, you know, like, I'm gonna ask you a question, and if I don't like the answer, I'm going to throw you out that window.
Yeah. This was an amazing scene because I just remember, like, He just throws this guy out the window.
Yeah, like he gets the truth out of him, the answer he wants. You know, he's like, well, I don't really like that. And, you know, he just goes and chucks him out of that window.
Like, they're at the top of a skyscraper. Yeah. And I was just like, he straight just threw that guy out of a window. Yeah. Like, this was amazing. Yeah. But then they cut to the scene where you just see him landing safely in a swimming pool. And you're kind of like, aw.
Yeah.
But then they do that great line where Yukio's like, how'd you know there was a swimming pool down there? And Logan's like, I didn't. You're like, amazing. He was just going to throw that guy out the window. He didn't care. I love it. I just love when you see Wolverine act like that.
Yep.
It's so much fun. So basically what happens here is they head back to the Yoshida estate because that's where Mariko has been brought back to. And like Logan and Yuki are now on the trail. Shinjin has brought Mariko back to that estate. He's going to have her killed. But this is when Harada and his big team of ninjas all show up. And they basically take out all the Yakuza men that are out there. And they sweep up Mariko and they take her away. So this all happens before Logan and Yukio actually show up. So by the time they get there, all this stuff has taken place. Mariko's already gone. All these Yakuza guys are dead from all the ninjas just whooping them up.
And I keep getting the name mixed up. Her dad was poisoned by them.
Shinjin or whatever was poisoned by him. Yep. Yeah. So they get in there, and at this point, before they move on, Logan kind of looks around, and if you remember, like, they had all those kind of jars at the beginning, and one of them had, like, this, like, weird spider thing in it. He kind of looks at it and notices it's not in there anymore.
He saw one in the x-rays in that big x-ray machine inside the grandfather.
Inside Yoshida. And he kind of notices that those jars are empty. And he gets this idea, and he lays down on Yoshida's little table, puts the little x-ray thing on him, and we see one of those little devices, like, inside, plugged onto his heart, and we get the realization that this is why his healing factor is not working. Yep. So that whole scene from earlier with Viper putting the thing inside of him was real. She had put something in there to suppress his healing factor. And this leads to one of the most intense scenes in this movie. Like, you thought that the bomb incinerating scene was intense. This is like, you know what this reminded me of? That scene in what was the Alien prequel movie that was out just recently?
Prometheus.
Yeah. This reminded me of the scene in Prometheus where the lady had to basically perform surgery on herself. Because what Wolverine decides to do is pop his claws, cut himself open, and reach inside with his bare hand to pull out this little device that's latched to his heart.
And you remember, too, Yukio had told him about his death and how she envisioned him holding his own heart in his hands and everything. And so she was real freaked out about it, and that's why when he finds this thing on his heart, and she's like, you know, no, this is what I've seen happen.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, nope, gotta do it. You know, we gotta get this thing out. And that is that about when Shinjin busts in on them?
Shinjin busts in. He's already not feeling well. Like, he's the ninjas have been there, but he's got the samurai armor. He went and got the samurai armor in. He busts in the room, and he starts this big fight with Yukio. So,
Well, he's trying to kill Wolverine while Yukio, Wolverine's, like, passed out, and Yukio's trying to protect him.
So what happens here, too, is, like, when he busts in, he bumps that x-ray thing off of Logan. Logan can no longer see what's inside. So he's operating blind now.
Yep.
He's just reaching around inside of his body without being able to see what he's doing.
And that's
kind of
when
thing.
It's like, well, I got to go and get, because he's going to sit there and operate, and Yukio's telling him not to. He's like, nope, got to do it. I got this. And then that's when Shinjin busts in and is trying to kill him and knocks that thing down, and Yukio's fighting him back to try to protect him, and now Wolverine can't see anything. And that's exactly like you said. That's when he's just like, well, now or never.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just kind of shoves his hand in there, reaching for that thing, and tries to get it.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's like that whole thing that Yukio had envisioned, but she hadn't envisioned the part where, you know, he pulls his heart out, gets that thing off, and then just grows back.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Because now his powers are fully activated again.
Right,
yeah.
It's an amazing
And it's another
scene.
Really cool Yukio fight scene.
Oh, yeah.
Holding back Shinjin. Like I said, she's just so much fun to watch in this movie. Every time she busts out the action stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So, yeah, that's exactly said. Like, we see Wolverine die, basically.
Yeah.
But since he removed the thing, the healing factor kicks in. He comes back alive. Perfect time to go ahead and just finish off Shinjin.
Yep.
And now we're good to go. Now Wolverine is back, and you're excited because you're like, oh, it's on now.
Yep.
His healing factor's back. He's about to go kill everybody until Mariko's safe. You know, you get real excited. So Logan and Mariko follow the trail, and they get basically to, like, I don't remember exactly where it's at, but it's almost like this castle, which is where Viper is.
It's like the village the grandfather had come from.
Okay, that's right.
You know, yeah, they'd talk about how that's
where his people, right.
Yeah, that's where his people
right.
originated.
Yeah. So Viper, who was the nurse at the beginning, kind of reveals herself to be like the villain. Now we know, like she's kind of
yeah,
like
which
this
we
villain.
Already pretty much
yeah
knew
we pretty much
like at no
out,
point but, is she even remotely likable.
Right. Exactly. You know? So she's there. She's got Mariko. Wolverine and Yukio basically are hot on the trail to go get them, but before they get there, Harada and his ninjas show up. They're working with Viper for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. They basically stop Logan and Yukio from getting in. They capture Logan. They bring him before Viper.
Now, and this is one of those deals, too, where it's kind of because Harada's a good guy. He's been a good guy most of the movie. Like, even when he came in and kidnapped Mariko, he was kidnapping her from her evil father.
Exactly.
You know, so he's been her protector the whole time, but you kind of get this, you know, when he first showed up, you're like, all right, he's a good guy, he's her protector, everything's going to be fine. And then by this point, you're like, all right, like, his motivation seems earnest, but I can't tell what's going on with this
guy. Exactly.
Because
exactly.
he's doing some really messed up stuff. He's working with this crazy doctor lady. You know, what is going on? Because he clearly has feelings for Mariko, but he's also, like, outside of his feelings for her, none of his actions seem to make any sense.
Right, you know? Right, exactly.
So, yeah, he comes out to confront Wolverine, and he's got his whole band of ninjas, and, you know, they start the fight, they injure Wolverine a little bit, he heals right back up, and so yep. it's kind of like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
You know, we thought we had slowed him down, now we haven't slowed him down.
Yeah.
And he just kind of, like, busts through, heading towards this castle, and he just starts getting hit with all those arrows.
Oh, that's right!
Yeah.
That was such
all
a
those,
cool
yeah.
scene!
And it really, it
all
reminded
those arrows.
Me of that. Like, you remember when in Spider-Man 2 when he was trying to stop that train and he just had all that webbing out?
Yeah.
It was kind of like a reverse of that.
Yeah.
Like, and here Wolverine is the train.
Yeah,
and it just
yeah.
keeps getting spiked with arrow after arrow in the back with all these ropes.
Oh.
And it's not even like they're trying to bring him down so much as they're just trying to drag him back.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah,
man.
And he just keeps plowing through. It was, oh, it was
what
cool.
an awesome scene. God, see, there's so many great scenes
yeah,
in this
yeah.
movie.
It's a really fun movie.
They really did great with this. So... Logan is brought before Viper, and they've got him now hooked up to this machine where they've got his hands kind of isolated off to, out to his side, and she does something like she kind of like gets in his face, and he gets mad, and he pops his claws even though he's in this machine, and that's when she kind of says in line, "Ah, that's exactly what I wanted you to do," and they basically do this like they trap his claws so that they're out now,
yeah,
and he can't retract his claws. They wanted him to pop his claws. And this is the part where we see this large, like, robot-looking version of the Silver Samurai rise up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's an interesting way to portray this character because in the comics, the Silver Samurai is a person, is a mutant, and by the way, is Harada. So this Harada character that we've seen running around through this whole movie is this ninja. He's the Silver Samurai in the comics. So this is kind of where the movie threw a twist at us.
Yeah.
He's not the Silver Samurai in this movie. It's apparently this big cybernetic giant robot suit. And so what happens is this robot Silver Samurai walks up to Wolverine. It's got an animanium sword. It starts, like, energizing, like it heats up. And it slices off his claws.
Yep.
And that's just one of those moments where you're just like, what? How are they going to fix this? Like, Wolverine doesn't have claws on his left hand now. Like,
yeah.
this is messed up,
yeah.
you know?
Well, and so what was super neat too is when they slice him off for the purpose of so this machine can connect to him like into his bone, like into the marrow and stuff.
Yes,
because they're still trying to steal his
yes
his, powers, his
yep.
regenerate. And you know, I don't know if the science there is that his mutant ability is in his bone marrow somehow or whatever, but it's still really cool. Just conceptually, it's like, well, how do you get to a guy whose entire skeleton is covered in an unbreakable metal? Well, you use some of that unbreakable metal to cut part of it off, and
right.
then you just jab some needles in there
yeah.
and go to town, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's
brutal. Yeah.
And cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So at this point, basically all hell breaks loose. I mean, Yukio's there to help be the bodyguard for Wolverine. She gets into a fight with Viper. Wolverine does kind of break himself out of that machine, has like a one clawed fight against the Silver Samurai, which is apparently a robot. That's
yeah.
the way they portray it. It's like this crazy robot who's just trying to hook up to Wolverine to steal his powers, but Wolverine's fighting it off. During all of this, Harada attempts to basically get Mariko out of there. And he's just like, look, me and you can just go. We can get out of here. We can save the day. And Mariko's kind of like, this is wrong.
Yeah.
This is wrong. Whatever you're doing, this is wrong. We've got to help Logan. Harada kind of realizes the error of his ways, and he basically starts to try to help Logan here.
Yeah.
So, again, another big twist. He's not the Silver Samurai. He's going to go stop the Silver Samurai now to try to help Logan. Do you remember exactly, like, because Viper dies here in this scene, but I can't remember exactly.
She was fighting Yukio.
Yukio finished her off, right?
Yeah, and I don't remember the death blow, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly.
But it was another cool Yukio fight scene.
Oh, Yukio was so much fun to watch in this. So while Harada is basically trying to save Logan, Silver Samurai mows him down. Harada dies also.
Yep.
So Harada dies, but it we get to this point then where Wolverine's other claws get chopped off. So Wolverine is now clawless.
Yeah.
And this Silver Samurai robot thing has now grabbed onto Wolverine's arms, has plugged into his claws, and the helmet thing had been fallen off of the Silver Samurai during this fight, and we are revealed that it's Yoshida. He's still alive and well. He's apparently in this samurai suit, which is keeping him alive, and he's going to steal Wolverine's healing factor so that he can be young again.
Yep.
So he's now hooked in.
And he's still got that same mentality. He's like, you know, like, I'm doing you a favor.
Exactly.
You know,
like,
I need this and you don't want it.
He basically,
so I'm going to take it.
And he kind of presents it as the whole, you know, we could have done this the easy way, but I'm taking this regardless if you're going to give it to me. And yeah, I'm doing you a favor by doing this. So he's hooked into Wolverine's claws. He's draining his power. We see Yoshida start de-aging, and he actually turns into the young Yoshida we saw from the beginning
cool
of the film.
Too. It was a really
which
neat
was
effect.
Really, really cool. But at this point, while this is going on, Yukio picks up Wolverine's chopped off claws from the ground, throws them across the room, and they just stick right into Yoshida's skull, which is enough to kind of make him, you know, knock him off a little bit. He detaches from Wolverine, which allows Wolverine's healing factor to kick in, and all of a sudden, he pops bone claws, which I was just like, that's one of those like mind-blowing moments where you're just like, whoa, the adamantium claws are gone?
Yeah.
And now they're bone?
Yep.
Like, this is nuts. So he pops the bone claws. He delivers the death blow to Yoshida.
Which I kind of, in retrospect, I kind of wish they hadn't done the claws in the 40s scene. The World War II scene.
Oh, so that
because you could, when you saw them then, you were like, awesome, bone claws, because this is before Weapon X. But it kind of killed a little bit of that, because you had never seen that in the movie before. So it killed a little bit of that reveal when they did it at the end and they pop back out. It's like, hey, those are back.
Right.
All right.
Right.
And I remember, too, because I was never a huge X-Men guy, but I remember when Wolverine lost the adamantium way back in the day, the first time.
That did happen.
Because
Magneto did that, though,
didn't he? Yeah, he didn't know he had claws in the comics before the Weapon X project.
Absolutely.
And so when Magneto showed up and yanked all that adamantium right off of his skeleton in the comics years and years and years ago, and this was like, if I remember correctly, he was in some sort of like, I don't know if intensive care is the right word, but I don't know, like, they didn't know for sure that his healing factor was going to be able to keep up with the damage that was done to him.
Uh-huh.
This was like a serious injury to Wolverine, the first one you would probably ever seen in the comics.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And then he healed it, you know, his factor, it did keep up, he got back to normal, he got back to strength, but the deal was that he was never quite as strong. He was never quite, like, the healing factor itself was much quicker when he lost the adamantium, but he was less, he had less strength.
Because he didn't have the protection over
and,
his bones,
and he
right?
didn't know that he had, yeah, exactly, he didn't have all the protection over it, so it's like, things would do more damage to him, they'd hurt
his
him more, but he would feel
and,
it way fast. He would heal it way faster.
Yeah.
Like, the healing factor went into overdrive, you know,
yeah.
But the whole point there was that he didn't think he had claws anymore, so he went, I want to say at least a few issues, never doing the claw thing, and then at some point, like, some kind of rage hit him, and he had to spring into action, and he turned into Feral Wolverine, and these bone claws burst out of his hands, and he's bleeding everywhere and freaking out because it hurts so bad.
Yeah.
And this is the panel in the comics of him, you know, like, screaming in pain because these claws are popping through, and in the middle of the 90s or whenever that came out, you know, when I was a kid reading these, even not caring that much about Wolverine, I was like, oh, he did have claws the whole time. What a crazy revelation. And I feel like this was the movie universe's chance to have that revelation, except they burned it by having him climb a well early in the movie.
Exactly.
You know?
That's true. And I didn't think about that because you definitely feel like, and I still felt this, but like, when Wolverine's claws get cut off, which, you know, adamantium's supposed to be indestructible, but I guess, you know, when you've got adamantium against adamantium,
yeah,
it's supercharged adamantium.
Yeah,
so when he loses his claws, it makes you go, what the heck's going to happen now?
Yeah.
Like, you can't have Wolverine without his claws. So I honestly, like, I just really wasn't expecting the bone claws to pop. I was just like, how are they going to fix this? Because he's got to have claws still.
Yeah.
Like, maybe if he holds the claws back up, are they going to heal together? like he's got to have his claws. So the bone claws popped, and I'm just kind of like, wow, that's kind of cool. Now, it does make me wonder if he's just going to have bone claws from now on in the films.
I don't know.
Or if they're going to find a way to put the adamantium back on them, because he did get the adamantium back in the comics at some point.
Yeah.
I don't remember how.
I might have stopped reading by then.
He got it back, so I would I mean, it's possible. They can always find a way.
Yeah, it's a comic movie. You do anything.
Yeah,
you know?
There's always find a way. So I thought that was a pretty exciting scene, though, when that happened.
For sure.
So, the day's saved. The evil's, you know, defeated. Mariko goes on basically to, she's going to stay behind. She's going to take over as the CEO of this corporation. She's going to clean things up. She's going to be a good boss kind of a person.
Yep.
So Wolverine says his goodbyes to her at the end and basically says he's going to leave. And Yukio's like, all right, well, I'm your bodyguard. So wherever you go, I go.
Which was cool too, because it helped alleviate that finality feeling. Because there's that thing, I mean, like, you felt the love connection between the two, so you kind of want them to just get together, but then, you know, he's got to go wander the earth and look for, I don't even remember what his purpose was when he left.
He didn't really have a place to go, remember? She was like, where do you want to go? And it was kind of like, I don't really have a place.
Yeah.
You tell me where you want
to
go.
I thought he had a reason for needing to leave, but he didn't know where to go or something.
I think, like, it was kind
of
one of those...
Maybe I'm remembering part of that wrong, but you never, like, it never felt like, well, we just can never be together, we have to say goodbye. It was more just like, I'm a grifter, I'm going to go grift. I'm a CEO, I'm going to CEO. But take my friend with you.
Exactly.
She could use some grifting.
Yeah.
You know, so it was more like a happy goodbye than a real tense, I'll never see you again, which
exactly.
I enjoyed. You know,
me too.
Yeah.
Me too. So, and that was it. That was the close of the film. So, overall, I really, really enjoyed this film. Now, it wasn't like amazing beyond belief kind of good. Like, it wasn't like, oh my god, that was the most amazing thing I've ever seen, like Avengers made me feel.
Yeah.
But it was like,
it was refreshing.
It was refreshing because it was the first X-Men film I have seen since X2 that I was really happy with when it was over.
Through and through.
Like, it was a very entertaining film. There was nothing about it that, like, angered you or made you mad. They didn't mess anything up with this. They told their own little isolated story, and they even did a pretty good job of adapting a classic comic book storyline into their movie universe. So I felt like it was a really really well done movie.
What excites me about it, and I'm hoping, you know, over the next few years they kind of start to get these points, is there's always an epic feel to these 2-hour superhero blockbusters. And I get it. If you're gonna dump $200 million into making a movie, you want it to be the only movie that exists for that time frame, you know?
Right.
But it doesn't have to be that way. Now, with the Marvel Universe and what they're doing, every movie they make is building towards something, but it still kind of works on its own, which I really enjoy. And what I liked about the prospect of this is that this kind of shows you that you can make a pretty good superhero movie. It doesn't really have to build towards anything.
Right.
This is a standalone story.
Absolutely.
Beginning
this was totally
to end, yeah.
It was a Wolverine
and
one shot.
There's absolutely no reason you can't do this with a Spider-Man movie.
Oh,
you
no
know?
Kidding.
You don't,
right?
Like, I loved the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. I liked it quite a bit. I'm really looking forward to the next one. I'm glad there's going to be 4 of them, I guess. But they did not have to make an origin story out of that movie.
That was my biggest problem with that movie.
They do not have to go back to the beginning every time. They can change the whole cast if they want to, and they can just plop in and go, you know what? You guys know how he got his spider powers.
I was going to say,
he's either in high school or he's not, whatever. This is just a fun movie with Spider-Man. And now that they've done that with Wolverine, I can really hope that the other studios can maybe take...
Yes.
You know, like, it's not just going to change overnight to where that's what they do, but maybe this will be the first one in the same way that X-Men was the one that said, you know what, spandex superheroes can work, you just got to do it right. Maybe now other people can look at this and go, well, they made a standalone Wolverine movie that was really cool.
Right.
Maybe we can just make a standalone whatever movie that's cool completely on its own and try that for a while.
Yeah, it gets...
Because I would love to see that as the new revolution.
Oh, me too, man.
Movies.
Yeah, because it gets to a point with a lot of these major superheroes where everybody knows.
Yeah.
We all know why Spider-Man's Spider-Man. We all know why Batman is Batman.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell us yeah. over and over
yeah.
again.
Like because, just because you put a new guy behind the mask doesn't mean I forgot that his parents are dead.
And that's and honestly, I think that that was part of the reason I didn't enjoy Amazing Spider-Man as much as I probably should have. And
you
should have
enjoyed it.
I know.
Awesome.
And again, we'll get into Spider-Man stuff in another podcast. But like, I that's actually a movie we were talking about movies where we feel opposite on. That's probably one we should talk about then because I didn't hate that movie, but I sure didn't love that movie.
See, I really liked it. I just wouldn't have made it.
Yeah.
You know?
So, but The Wolverine, I would definitely give it a solid thumbs up. Like, it's not going to blow your mind or anything like that, but if you like Wolverine, it's a super fun ride.
Yep.
That's just the best way
and
to
it
explain
doesn't,
it.
And it doesn't
like,
need to blow your mind. Like
exactly.
I mean, that's what's so cool about this movie. It's a pretty good action flick.
Yeah.
It's a really solid story built around an action movie that happens to have superpowers in it.
Right.
You know?
Right. Awesome. Cool. Yep. So, now, what's really fun here is, like, you know, ever since the Marvel Studios films have started, they've kind of set this precedent where the credits are going to offer us, like, a little teaser at what's to come. And I was really kind of excited to see that Fox kind of picked up on that with the Wolverine here, because we get a mid-credits little teaser for what's to come. And we talked about it a little bit before the movie review here that they did greenlight the Days of Future Past film.
Mm-hmm.
So, we get this scene. It's it tells us in the scene that it's 2 years after the events of what we just saw in the Wolverine. Wolverine's in an airport somewhere for some reason. We don't know exactly where he's going. He's just doing his he's doing his drifter thing. But at least he's not a hobo. Like, he's cleaned up and he looks like Wolverine. And it's actually kind of a fun scene, too, because he's standing in the line, like, security at an airport.
Yep.
And he gets to the part where he just asks him for a pat-down. Like, he can't go through the metal detector because, you know, he's got adamantium skeleton. So that's kind of fun. And while he's standing there, he looks up at a TV. And there's, like, this news report on that's talking about Trask Industries.
Yep.
And you're like, ooh, Trask Industries. If anybody's not familiar with that, that's the whole thing that's behind the Sentinel program.
Mm-hmm.
Giant
mutant hunting robots.
The mutant hunting robots. Exactly. Trask Industries. So Wolverine kind of looks up at that, kind of acknowledges it or whatever, but whatever. It's just some report that's on TV. But then all of a sudden he looks down at the trays where he had just dumped, like, change or whatever and noticed that, like, the change and keys or, like, you know, everything that's metal is floating in the air. And he stops and he spins around real fast and he pops his claws and Magneto standing behind him.
Old Magneto.
Yep. Ian McKellen Magneto is standing there in full Magneto, you know, like, he's Magneto,
The last time we saw him, he was lobotomized at the end of 3 for
whatever
reason.
Right? Yeah.
Supposed to be powerless.
Right. So he's there. He's you know, Wolverine, he's using his magnetism on Wolverine. Wolverine can't move.
Yep. And he's mad.
And he's so mad. And he's like, what are you doing here? And Magneto's just kind of like, well, hold on. You know, like, actually, I need you.
Yeah.
And at this point, everybody in the airport just freezes.
Yep.
Time stands still.
Which is something you'll be familiar with if you're familiar with all the X-Men movies.
Yep. And then we get this great shot of just the X wheels on a wheelchair spinning. And as we pan out, we see Patrick Stewart as Xavier rolling up on Wolverine. Again, another character that they killed off in X3.
Yeah.
But he's alive again.
Yeah.
So
I think they acknowledge it, too.
Yeah.
Because then Wolverine says something about, like, him supposed to be dead or whatever.
Yep.
And he tells Wolverine right there, he's like, I told you weren't the only one who was special or whatever.
Yep, exactly.
You know, which I think he told him in the first one.
Yes.
You know, which is a really cool throwback.
And that's basically where the scene ends, with Wolverine standing there between X and Magneto, and the scene ends.
Yep. And they're basically telling him, you know, something epic is happening, and we need to work on it.
We got to work together on this. And that was exciting.
Yeah. Oh.
That's one of those things where you're just like, oh, I'm back. I am into the X-Men stuff all over again.
It's not possible to keep a green light that big under wraps, so I can't blame them for it. But if I didn't already know practically everything about Days of Future Past going into it, like,
could you imagine
all the people who were in it and Bryan Singer being back and the fact that that's the story they're even doing, if I didn't know any of that stuff, and I just saw old Magneto and old Professor X show back up in the credits of the Wolverine movie, my head would have exploded.
That would have been the equivalent of when Nick Fury showed up at the end of Iron Man.
Yeah.
Like, if we didn't know about that movie already, we would have been like, this is like when the Avengers was first teased to us, you know?
Absolutely.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
So, needless to say, that scene right there was enough to make me forget that Wolverine Origins existed.
Yep.
It was enough to make me forget about all the stuff I hated in X3.
Yep.
I am excited for Days of Future Past.
Oh, man.
I am
so
excited.
I was one 100% positive. I would never be excited for another X-Men movie.
Me too.
Even after X3, I went, oh, that kind of stunk, but maybe the rest of them will be okay, but I don't know if I can get pumped about them or not. And then I saw Origins, and I went, this franchise is dead.
It's gone.
You know, yeah. And like, so I wasn't excited for First Class at all. Now, even after I saw it and really enjoyed it, I still wasn't excited going in, you know, and it was like, well, if they ever make a sequel to this, maybe I can be a little bit excited about it because this was good, but I'm not going to be pumped for one. Right. And when they announced the Wolverine and they looked like they were going to make a real movie out of it, it was the same thing where I'm like, all right, I'll see it. But yeah. That's not excitement.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, like passive indifference. Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, I'm not angry. That's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Right.
But yeah, man, the more stuff that comes out, it's like, hey, all that stuff we screwed up, we really want to fix it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We're going to get everybody back and just make it good. And I'm like, I'm so pumped
to
return to that world.
I am so excited.
Yeah. Have you seen the posters?
I have not, actually.
Oh, they're very cool. They're like, the two of them I've seen online, one of them, it's old Magneto, and there's a giant X through it, like an X logo.
Yeah.
And inside the X part is young Magneto. And the faces match up perfectly.
Ooh.
So it's just like a Fassbender McKellen mesh.
Yeah.
You know, and then they do the same thing with Stewart and McAvoy.
Do they do one with Logan where it's just the same face on both?
That would be hilarious. That would be hilarious. But no, I've only seen the two. And it's cool too because like young Professor X, McAvoy's all like bearded and long haired. And Stewart's all completely bald old guy.
Yeah.
So they mash together kind of funny.
Yeah.
You know, whereas the first when I first saw the Magneto one, I couldn't even tell because somebody was like, oh, this poster's so cool, go look at it. And I looked at it, and I'm like, see, McKellen, that's pretty neat, you know. But then I looked a little closer, I'm like, oh, inside, it's younger one.
Yeah.
And then I looked at the Professor X one, I'm like, oh, I wish I had seen this one first. I would have caught it right away.
Yeah, I will say that the casting of the younger Xavier and Magneto were pretty good.
Oh, yeah,
like,
awesome.
They definitely resemble,
awesome. Yeah.
You know, younger versions of those characters.
Yep, for sure. Yeah,
yeah,
and they're really good actors.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. I have high hopes for it. I hope it's going to be great.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be like Avengers level of good, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
But yeah, exactly.
I know. I think you guys will notice I put Avengers up on a pretty high pedestal. Like, I love that film so much. So,
it's pretty much untouchable as far as comic book movies.
That's how I feel, too.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. Some people disagree, but I love Avengers.
Yeah.
So. But I'm excited. Days of Future Past looks terrific.
And look at that. We logged in a podcast in under the amount of time it would take to watch the movie we
talked
about.
Oh, my gosh, right? Yeah, wow. We talked for like... How long did we talk for Man of Steel?
Like 2:40 or something? Ridiculous.
I can't believe people listen to that.
I'm not sure, 100% sure it was that long, but it was long.
Oh, man. Yeah. Awesome. Well, there you go, guys. That's kind of a really fun kind of run through the X-Men movie franchise, a look at the Wolverine, and... Pretty exciting stuff on the horizon, I'd say, for the X-Men movie franchise. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Shouldn't be nearly as much conflict after our opinions on this one, since everything was pretty well just, you know, hey, this is fun.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, that's kind of just the way you have to look at these movies, too.
But as with last time, if you disagree with anything, that's fine. We respect your opinion.
Absolutely.
Just, you know, don't be angered by anything we're saying. We're just sharing our opinions.
Exactly.
You know?
Perfect way to put it. Yep. No reason to be mad, guys.
Yep. Yep. Do awesome. Feel free, though, to correct us on any of that stuff we missed.
Oh, yeah, totally. If we were wrong about something.
We just did not have time to devote to 15 hours of X-Men movie watching to completely prepare for this.
We thought about it, man. But awesome. Well, before we let you go, did you have anything you wanted to plug, like your Twitter handle or anything like that again?
Yeah, you know, if anybody wants to follow me at @jleonard31, I really don't tweet nearly as much as I should. I intend to fix that eventually. So I tell you, I make you this promise. If you want to go on and start following it, I won't annoy you with a bunch of useless tweets. And hopefully eventually I'll start posting some pretty entertaining stuff.
Awesome. Great. Well, Jonathan, I want to thank you once again for taking the time to join us here on this podcast.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah, anytime we talk movies, man, you'll be here. And we got some good stuff coming up. We got Thor coming up.
I know.
We're going to have to talk
November.
About Thor.
That's in November. I doubt we'll do a whole podcast on it, but we're about to go see Kick-Ass 2.
Oh, that's right. We are.
Here.
That's what we're going to be doing when we leave here. So awesome. Well, thanks once again for joining us. It was awesome having you on.
Appreciate it.
And guys, remember, if you're listening to this show, there are several different ways that you can listen to us. If you are an iTunes user, you can find us on iTunes, and I would love it if you subscribe to us there. And if you wanted to rate us, that'd be great too. Help us spread the word on the Geek Easy podcast. We're also available on Stitcher now. So if you have an Android device or if you just prefer using Stitcher, that's another way that you can follow this podcast. Of course, we're also located on Podbean, and you can always find the latest episode at pixel-dan.com, which is also where you can check out all of my video reviews and all that other good stuff. So once again, everybody, Thank you for once again joining us in the Geek Easy. My name is Pixel Dan, and I'll see you guys next time.
The Geek Easy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. Any animated series discussed are copyright their respective owners. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of the Geek Easy Podcast.